300 million years ago in the Carboniferous period, the area we now know as Teesside was a hot, humid swamp located near the equator. As the plants and animals in the swamp died and decayed, they produced thick layers of organic matter, which over time became peat. As the continental shelves moved north, the pressure and heat from the Earth's core removed most of the oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen, leaving Carboniferous sediment, to you and me, coal. Today, just east of Durham, the former mining community of Easington Colliery sits directly on top of what was a primeval swamp. For over 100 years, the coal fields beneath the town sustained the economic and social life of the community. I'm John Sargent, and this is People's Landscapes, a podcast from the National Trust which explores how people, places, and cultures have come together. In this four-part series, we will discover what connects Ice Age floods and the dialects we speak, how geological events can form the bedrock of community or become the driving force behind neighborhood feuds. In this episode, the creator of Horrible Histories, Terry Deary, returns to his roots in the Northeast. He'll explore the complicated relationship between the people of Easington and their mining industry. Coal built their community, but damaged their natural environment.
I grew up in Sunderland, about 20 minutes north of here, into a mining family. My granddad was a mine manager, my Uncle Billy was an electrician at Whitburn Colliery. But when they did a careers sample, they sent me down a mine, and I didn't really fancy it for myself. But I do know this area, and it's easy to get caught up with these images of men with blackened faces and all the tales of the real and imagined horrors of the mine. But when you actually speak to the people of Easington Colliery, they have very different memories of what Easington was like in its heyday.
My name's Freddie Welsh. I was a miner at Easington Colliery for about 30 years. It was a very close community, 1,500 feet down under the sea. When you go out there, you just get used to it. It's water off a dog's back.
My name's Heather Ward, and I've lived here all my life. You can't beat a mining community. It's that word, community. Down the pit, you relied on your marrows, that's your workmates, for your life.
The camaraderie and the friendship at Easington, better than any other pit we've been to.
I'm Wayne Appleton. I'm a ranger on the Durham Coast for the National Trust. I grew up in Hordon, which is just on the Durham Coast. It was the largest mine in Europe, and it was a nice place to be, to be honest, just lovely.
Everybody seems to get the opinion that there's coal dust everywhere, that everything's constantly filthy, and it's quite the opposite.
And when they come home from work, they'd go to the allotment, feed the hens, ducks.
We never had to go to the shop for veg. It was all fresh out the garden. And I used to go and sit up the garden with my dad. His garden, his allotment, looked over the land right across to the sea. And we sat there this day and he said to me, Heather, look at this. Look at that beautiful sea and sky. We had struggle and we had hardship, but we had everything around us. Everybody used to go down the beach. It was funny, you would take a bottle of water and some sandwiches and you'd go down the beach.
Lads had finished the shift and they'd go down on the beach. Miners had come from all over to fish on a Saturday or a Sunday.
I used to pedal my bike along the beach and all the kids would go down there. They would go swimming in the sea.
We haven't got a beach like, I didn't know, I've never been to Brighton or Weymouth where there's nice sandy beaches. We've got a beach which has been damaged.
The unwanted coal would be tipped into the sea, and the theory was it would be taken out and we would never see it again. But of course it used to come back in with the, and then the tide would go back out and the beach was black.
was full of sewage and waste, and through the Dean, all the streams through the Deans were polluted with sewage. But that's what we had. That's what we used.
We had friends, we had family. We were all together. You enjoyed what you had around you.
There was mines all around us, right round us. They were closing one by one every couple of years in accommodation. The 7th of May, 1993. It was like a black cloud over the colliery. When the colliery closed, a lot of people moved out the place, and the houses become empty, and the community spirit, the mining community spirit's getting less and less.
I was a bit disappointed when they closed because I wanted to go down. I heard all the stories from my dad and my granddad, stories of enormous fossils just in the walkways as you're walking down, and the fact that my granddad worked 7 miles out under the sea was just fascinating to me, and I wanted to do that. I never did. And it went from wagons driving around, people walking around, noise, to just becoming quiet. Everything just slowly disappeared, and the whole village just became quiet.
The facilities and everything, all that got just knocked down. All the buildings, the canteen, the workshop, blacksmith shops. The last bit of the mining was the beach. When the National Trust took over, the people of Easton were wary of them. They were a bit downhearted, just with them taken over. They weren't very liked. I think it was easier, the National Trust, oh, they're horrible. They'll put fences up and signs up, keep off here, don't go here, birds nesting, this, that and the other.
Mining villages were like little socialist enclaves, so we always looked after ourselves. But when the big organisation steps in, you think, oh, glory, what they're going to do here? Are they going to spoil everything, or are they going to tell us what they think we should have?
They thought the National Trust was another form of authority that would tell them what to do, so they didn't like it. There's one little village where they'd pelt your Land Rover with stones, so... And you would never go anywhere on site by yourself.
I've come about 15 minutes south of Easington Colliery to the National Trust base at Castleeden Dean Nature Reserve to meet Wayne, who you heard from earlier in the podcast. I want to find out what it's like when an organisation that's generally seen as a national treasure starts to work in a place where the reception is far from welcoming. Hello, Wayne.
Hello, how are you?
You're the ranger for the Castleeden Dean Nature Reserve. Have you just joined the National Trust as a job, or have you been interested in it for a long time?
I've been working for the National Trust on and off for 26 years, and I started when I was 14 as a volunteer. Before I actually started volunteering with the National Trust, I wanted to be a vet. And then I came out with the National Trust volunteering one day from school. All the schools would volunteer for Dennis Rooney. Dennis Rooney was the ranger on the coast when I first started. He was a very interesting bloke. And I can always remember getting there, and Dennis Rooney just opened the back of the Land Rover, and he had about 40 bow saws, and there was about 40 children, and he just went, pick a bow saw and go and attack a tree. And there was just people upside down, hanging upside down in trees, cutting branches they were sitting on, and it was great fun. As soon as the group finished, we went straight back to school. I went home stinking of mine waste and stinking of everything, and my mum shouting at me for making a mess. And I told my mum I'd be back in half an hour, ran straight down the beach. Dennis Rooney was still clearing the mess up that the kids had made, and asked to volunteer, and that was it. That was the start of my life in the National Trust. I loved it.
And were you as unpopular then as a 14-year-old as you were later?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened to you as a kid then?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. It was quite a scary experience. We would basically shouted at. Loads of antisocial behaviour, really. You could see the light at the end of the tunnel. You could see after even a couple of years how feelings for you would change. And that was just by talking to people and getting to know people better. And explaining that we're not here to stop anything, we're just here to help. And people start to like her.
And do people appreciate you?
Yeah, a lot. We get phone calls all the time from people who keep an eyes out for us and like looking after the place. They actually feel as though they own the place as well. So it's nice.
The beach today is a model beach, but what was it like when you first came?
It was always just black and grey sludge with coal mixed in and metal sticking out, and it was just like another planet.
I don't suppose you've got any photographs from those days, have you?
I've got a video.
Really?
Yeah. I'll show you it now.
Right.
They were trying to recreate a planet called Fiorino 161, which was a prison planet on Alien 3.
Oh, not very complimentary to easy, is it? A very hostile sort of alien wandering down through these cranes. Very scary place to be.
Yeah, it was. And it didn't take that much to actually create that.
That's what I'm saying, and no set dressing needed.
That was all ready for them.
So that's what it looked like in the 90s. I don't suppose we'd go and have a look at what it looks like now?
Yeah, of course.
Great.
Let's go.
A Land Rover Defender.
Yeah. Best vehicle in the world.
So it's a long time since I've been here. What am I going to expect to see different from the last 30 years?
You'll find it difficult to actually tell that there was actually waste on the beach, to be honest.
And this is all down to the Turning the Tide project?
The project removed nearly 80 million tonnes of waste off the beach.
80 million?
80 tons. Million tonnes of waste.
Where did it go?
It was actually brought inland and meadows created over the top. It's where you have really specific flora, fauna, and the Durham Argus butterfly is actually on this coastline as well. There's now a footpath that goes all the way around the coast.
And this coastal path, they now have races on it?
Yes, I actually organise a half marathon every year, and it's classified as the most brutal half marathon in the northeast of England.
Wow. But I mean, it would have been not brutal, it would have been impossible before.
It would have been completely impossible, yeah. Okay, we're here.
Great, thank you.
Do you think it's changed any since you were here last?
It's unrecognisable. I mean, all along the coast there were industrial-type cranes and things that took the coal out to sea. They're all gone.
Okay, would you like to have a look down on the beach?
I'd love to. So these are all new paths?
These are, yes. This was created.
And there's not much I recognise, but that bridge there...
The bridges, yeah.
Obviously...
These were all blocked up. When the colliery was running.
But when we get underneath the bridge, we'll come out onto the beach?
Yes, we'll come back onto the fields just above the beach.
And I'll see all the coal washed up. There must be still coal out there.
There is, yeah. And when you get a rough sea, that's when it comes in. But you also get an awful lot of sea glass as well, because there used to be the blast furnaces on the blast beach, it seemed.
Right.
And they chucked all the waste glass into the sea and it gets washed back up again. You get people who come along and all they do is collect sea glass and they've got bags of it as they're walking out.
And here is the famous coast itself. And now we finally reach the beach, which is not sand. It's rocky, isn't it? But nor is it black. It's got real character, hasn't it? They've got these lovely white stones.
Yeah, and you can actually see seaweed.
Really?
The rocks were absolutely clear of any form of life. And now there's all kinds. You get crabs, butterfish, and people fish on this beach for salmon as well. There's a lovely little rock pool there, oyster catcher flying up there. And it was only Friday where there was dolphins 30 metres out.
And can you find me any of this glass?
I'll have a look. We'll have a look further down. The dark black and red ones are quite rare.
So I'm looking for a dark red to make my fortune.
They're just quite difficult to find, the dark red ones. There's a tiny piece there.
Oh, that's a nice shape, that is. I'm going to take this bit of glass home as my souvenir. But this is absolutely glorious. This beach looks fabulous. It's a tourist destination now. But you wouldn't think, looking at it now, that once it was a mining community. I suppose that's what the people who worked in the mining community were worried about when you arrived with your cleanup.
We were trying to clean it up, but we could never clean it up to the extent where everything would have disappeared. And we don't want to get rid of the whole idea that the mines were here. It's part of the history of the coastline. The sea will always bring it back. The sea, in high tides, the sea will always bring remnants back, whether it be belting, coal. There's the people who come down and take some of the remnants, mining artifacts, take them away and create mining art with them. And a lot of sea glass goes into jewellery.
I'm back in the village of Easington Colliery, on my way to meet Fred, who you heard earlier in the podcast. Fred's an Easington local who's using mining history that the sea's reclaimed to make some truly unique creations. You're Fred.
I am.
I'm Terry.
Hiya, Terry. Pleased to meet you.
I'm pleased to meet you. I've been hearing about you.
Aye.
You're an entrepreneur. What about the sea glass things you make?
Aye, I make the bits of jewellery.
Where did it all start?
Well, I take my dogs out. I walk along the beach. And just, you think things out and just look and find it.
So, apart from the glass, you also make mining memorabilia. Can you talk me through some of these?
Wait. I go around the car boot sales. Anything brass. I get the wood off the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I get the coal off the beach.
So here we've got a brick.
That there's a one-off mine.
That's fabulous, Curry. That.
It's a one-off. You know why? NCB. National Coal Board. Same.
And the brick has been stamped and the miner's lamp is on top. So that's a miner's lamp on a brick surrounded by coal. That's actually real coal from Easington Beach. You are the artist who's preserving the East Durham Coalfield.
I am.
You are.
I'm keeping our heritage going.
That's right.
And for the younger generation, they're going to look at it and going, hey, is that what they're doing? Is that coal?
And so what about the clean-up job that's been going on since 2000? Because the National Trust reckoned when they came to start cleaning up, there was a lot of rubbish and people resented it that they came in and started cleaning up.
They did. They were wondering what was going off with them. You know, the National Trust people think, what they're up to. But we've come round to their thinking.
That's what I'm gathering. And it's not just Fred who's coming round to the National Trust way of thinking. Local resident Heather Wood no longer views this large organisation coming into the community as a threat. She now sees it as an opportunity for positive change.
I was amazed when I was told by a friend that the National Trust were organising a miners' picnic to bring the community together again, because I never saw the National Trust as doing something like that. To me, they were purely and simply the environment. But now they seem as if they're saying, we need to show you what to do with the land that you've got now that you've got it. Once over, I might have thought that was a terrible thing for them to do, to come in and say, this is how you use your land. But I think the initiative is great and I want to be part of it. It won't solve all the problems that we've got. The problems are so big. But I think the National Trust doing this gives us something that's happy, something that we can enjoy. If we get it right this time, see, I'm saying we, it's not them if they get it. If we get it right this time, then it will continue year after year and hopefully it will become a big thing that people will want to come to. It's going to be a good day, but I hope it's the first of many.
It's been good to come back to a place I haven't visited in 30 years. It's not just the landscape that's changed. It's the people I talk to who've embraced that change. They're celebrating the past, but working towards a better future.
To learn more about this podcast and other audio programs from the National Trust, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/podcasts. The People's Landscapes podcast is part of a year-long program of events, exhibitions and debates inspired by the 200-year anniversary of the Peterloo Massacre in Manchester. Today, as the crowds mill around Peter Street or sip afternoon tea in the city's Midland Hotel, most visitors are blissfully unaware of the dramatic events that took place here 200 years ago. In the same spirit, we invite you to look beyond the beauty and familiarity of your favourite National Trust properties and take a deep dive into their surprising and hidden histories. To learn more about the events and exhibitions associated with People's Landscapes, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/People's Landscapes.